And then you get to okay and improve the fact that you know that we're recording you and that anything you say can and will be posted online. All right. That's it. We're ready to go. Share screen. And if you notice at the top of the page, it says Perek Tet Zion. Yay, we're moving forward. At a quick snail's pace, we're moving forward. Perek Tet Zion. It's a quick recap where we were at. David is leaving Yerushalayim. He's headed north. He leaves, he crosses over. Sorry. Tahar is a team. Sorry, I'm just got something in my throat. And from there, he heads north towards what will eventually be his journey into Midbar Yehuda. And along, just a quick recap of Perek Tetvav. Along the way, he encounters a number of individuals who come to his aid. Specifically, he starts with Itai Agiti, and then you have the Kohanim, and eventually Hushai Ha'arki. All of these people play a role to become to be in the future chapters. So it's all sort of setting the stage for what will happen. But David leaves. He first encounters Itai Giti together with 600 of the families from Gat. And eventually, after a conversation, which we talked about at length last week, they join his ranks. Then he has the Kohanim and he sends the Orim back to Yerushalayim. Again, a subject we talked about. And he sends not only the Kohanim, but also the sons of the Kohanim to be able to communicate with David so that there is a form of communication. Then he hears about Achitophel. And when he hears about Achitophel having joined Avshalom, he's very worried about Achitophel and he prays Hashem, Sakel natatzata Achitophel Hashem, disrupt the council of Achitophel. And lo and behold, before he can blink an eye, Vayid David ba darosh, he gets to this pass near Har HaZeitim. And Hushai Ha'arki comes before him and again ready to join his ranks. Hushai Ha'arki, we discussed, is described as Rea David, David's friend, David's counsel, but on a personal level, not on an official level. And he therefore sends Hushai Ha'arki back to Yerushalayim and says to him, you are in a key position to disrupt the Council of Achitophel, you will be a great spy for me. Here's the form of communication. You'll be able to communicate with the two sons of Eviatar and Tzadok, Achimatz and Yonatan, Shlachtem biyadam elai, kol davar shetishma, whatever you hear, send. And Hushai comes back to Yerushalayim. And so the stage is set. One after another, all the people that have come to David have been an expression of loyalty to David, loyalty and commitment to David's Malchus, eventually will help him return to that king, to that place. And more or less, the Perek essentially lays out for us the conflict between, on the one hand, David's commitment to the decree of whatever God lays out for him, and on the other hand, the preparation that David uses, all of these people who come to his aid and to and express their loyalty to him in a way that will benefit him in the future. That brings us to Perek Tet Zion. And we're going to do Perek Tet Zion in pieces, of course. It's a series of stories, but we're going to kind of get some traction, look at some of the stories, and then come back and explore them in more detail. But it's important to see this as a continuity. David avar ma'at meharosh. David passed a little bit past that top of that hill of what we refer to as what is most likely Har HaZeitim. And v'hine tziva na'ar mefiboshet likrato. And who comes out to him? Who does he encounter? If not an old familiar face. Tziva na'ar mefiboshet. Now, na'ar mefiboshet is a little misleading because na'ar mefiboshet sounds like he's a young boy. He's not. We'll see in a moment in Perek Tet, he has 15 of his own children. So 15 of his own children, he's not a na'ar. He is called a Na'ar because he is a servant, meaning Na'ar in this context doesn't mean young, it means a servant. Servant of Mephibosheth. And this Na'ar Mephibosheth, this tziva, comes to him v'tzemed chamorim chavushim, with a pair of donkeys saddled, v'alehem matayim lechem u'mea tzimukim, 100 clusters of 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, umea kaitz, and some summer fruits or dried figs, v'nevel yayin, and wine. And all of these provisions upon these donkeys, out comes tziva, Na'ar Mephibosheth, to greet David with all of these provisions. V'yomer ha'melech el tziva, king says to tziva, ma'i lalach? What is all this? What do you mean by this? What is this? Ayomer tziva hachamorim lebet hamelech. The donkeys are for the king's household, which Mefarshim understand to mean the king's wives that came with, for them to ride. Lirkov. V'alechem ve'akayitz, and as for the bread and the dried fruit, le'achol ha'na'arim. That's for the men, the young, to eat. Their food, provisions. V'ayayin lishtot, and the wine to drink. All those who are faint, who are tired in the desert, I brought it for you, my king. Which the king responds and says, and where is your master's son, referring to Mephibosheth? Tziva said to the king, Mephibosheth is sitting in Yerushalayim. Because he said, today the house of Israel will restore me to the kingdom of my father. You remember, Mephibosheth, we'll come back, we'll look at this in more detail, is the son of Yehonatan, grandson of Shaul HaMelech. So Tziva essentially accuses Mephibosheth of a statement which in itself is treasonous, that the end result will be that Israel will restore me to my kingdom, and therefore he's waiting for that to happen in Yerushalayim. He's not coming. V'yomer ha'melech l'tziva, so the king said to Tziva, hinei lecha kol asher l'mephibosheth. I give you all that belongs to Mephibosheth, I give to you. Vayomer tziva ishtachaveti emtzachem be'enecha, Adoni HaMelech, I bow down to you, let me find favor in your eyes, O my king. How wonderful, thank you so much, I'm so grateful to you. Okay. Next story. I'll come back to it. Tziva and Mephibosheth are going to occupy us for a few weeks. But I will come back. Let's just go on a few more psukim. Uva HaMelech David ad Bachurim. David continues towards the area called Bachurim. V'ine misham ish yotzei mimishpachat beit Shaul u'shmo Shim'i ben Gera. And behold, a man came out from the house of Saul, whose name was Shim'i ben Gera. Yotzei mekalel. He came out cursing at David. He emerged from the hills together with, as we'll see, a whole entourage of people cursing David. And he was throwing stones at David, and all the servants of David, and all the people, all the warriors, everybody, the whole David, so marching through with this whole entourage, the 600 families from Gat, and all of the soldiers of Tzva Giborim and Yoav's army, and there is Yoav, and there is Shimi ben Gera on the hilltop with all of his friends, throwing stones at David and yelling and screaming and cursing at them. And what did Shimi say? This is what he said. Say, Ish Hadamim v'Ish HaBlial. Get out, go, you man of blood, you wicked man. God has paid you back for all the blood of the house of Saul, whom you took. And when you took the kingdom from him, by taking the kingdom from you and giving it to your son Avshalom, this is your own mischief, your own evil, because you are a man of blood. And after this treasonous song, Meomer Avishai ben Tsruya Alamelach. So Avishai ben Tsruya turned to the king. Now we are very familiar with the identification of these individuals. You have three of the children of Tsruya. One died early in Sefer Shmuel Bet. His name is Amasa. Then you have Yoav, who we've encountered many times. We're very familiar with Yoav. And Avishai, who is the younger brother of Tsruya being David's sister. Yoav and Avishai, brothers. Yoav and Avishai were the two soldiers who split the army when they were fighting against Bnei Amon back in that fateful story that led to the story of David and Bathsheba. So Avishai ben Tsruya says to the king, why should this dead dog curse my king? Let me go. I'll take his head off. The king, kind of exhausted, says, what am I going to do with you, Bnei Tsruya? God has said to him, curse David. Who is going to question God and say, why have you done this? God has sent Shimi ben Gera to curse me, so be it. Similarly, Bayomet David al Avishai vel kol avadav, David makes a public proclamation to Avishai and to all of his servants, Hinei b'ni, ashi yatza mime'ai, mevakeshet nafshi, my own son, who seeks to destroy my life, Rav Shalom, v'afki ata ben ayimini, and now this Benjaminite, and yichudo, let him be, v'kalel, and let him curse, what do I care? Ki amar lo Hashem, God has sent him. Maybe God will look at my eyes and will pay me for tolerating all of this shame, will repay me the goodness for allowing me to be cursed today, and that will be a good for me in the end. So let him be and say nothing. So he went along his way. And Shimi continued to follow him. And Shimi holech b'tzela ha'har, and the hillside of the mountain, Shimi followed him. Halach v'yikalel, going and cursing, v'yisakel v'avanim lumato, and throwing stones, dipa b'afar, and throwing dust at him, and all of this directed at David. Okay, we're going to stop here because more or less that's enough for today. Certainly, we could take a step back and ask a simple question: what is the difference between Perek Tedvav and Perek Tedzayin? In atmosphere, in character, in message, in what is the difference overall between the two chapters? This chapter, the kind of the tenor of this chapter versus the chapter before. This should be straightforward. I'll set it up for you. If Perek Tedvav in the previous chapter were all the people who were loyal to David and came running to David to express their loyalty, chapter 16
is cursing him.
It's the cold water to pour on the story to let us know that not everybody came running to David's side, not everybody supported David, not everybody loved him. And you have Tziva's accusation that Mephibosheth is committing treason by waiting for him to be restored to the throne. And you have Shimi ben Gera coming out to curse him. This is not a smooth sailing journey of David on his way. Okay, that's by way of big picture. Zeroing in on the first part of this chapter, which is where we're going to spend the next few weeks, I want to understand the story of Tziva and Mephibosheth. Because Tziva's accusation of Mephibosheth committing treason by waiting in Yerushalayim for the restoration of the kingdom of Shaul is quite extraordinary. And on the face of it, David seems to accept it by taking the land away from Mephibosheth and giving it to Tziva. So there is much to unpack in this story. In order for us to do that properly, we need to understand who Tziva is and who Mephibosheth is. So I don't know how many people remember that we encountered them once before, way back when. Last time we encountered the two of them was in chapter 9. That was a full at least 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Probably 3 years ago. So in order to really do this properly, we need to go back and review the story of Tziva and Mephibosheth. Who are they? How do they come to be in David's service? What is going on here as background to this conversation? So let's jump back to Perek Tet. This is Shmuel Bet Perek Tet, and this is where we're going to pick up. Now, the story of Mephibosheth and Tziva in this chapter is a little bit of a mystery as far as chronology goes. When exactly does this story take place? Not 100% clear. We know, if I go back two chapters, chapter 7 and 8, we know chronologically. 7 is the attempt to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. David wants to build the temple. He brings the Aron back to Yerushalayim. He wants to build the temple. Natan comes to him and he says, no, he can't build the temple. And that sets in motion his, because he can't build the temple because he doesn't have any real heirs to the throne. And Michal is dead and distanced. And therefore, David is left with this mystery of not building the temple. In Perek Chet, we have the beginning of the series of battles that will set up the story for David and Bathsheba. Remember, Perek Chet and Perek Yud are really one part of the story that we spent some time talking about last year. One part of the background, the battles with Aram, battles in the north, battles in the east, that set up eventually the conflict, the story of Bathsheba. In between them, there's a story in Perek Tet that chronologically doesn't fit. I'm just going to take a quick pause to fix a video issue. Just give me 1 second. Sorry about that. One of the reasons I had a different setup for a long time, but that setup died on me last week. Okay, so chronologically, the story of, in the middle, the story of that we're going to read about, Tziva, Mephibosheth, and David, doesn't fit in the context of what was going on over there. The whole discussion as to why it's there and actually when it takes place, it has to do with the opening sentence, Vayomer David, Achi Yesh Od, Asher notar lebet Shaul ve'esei mo chesed b'avur Yonatan. David asks the question, is there any heir to the house of Saul? Is there anybody left from the household of Shaul HaMelech to whom I can show kindness because of my commitment to Yonatan? Remember, David and Yonatan had a very special relationship. When they departed because David had to run away, they took an oath that they would be loyal to each other and to their children for generations to come. And so David wants to fulfill that oath of chesed to the children of Yonatan. Unclear when this story takes place. The most likely scenario is that it's earlier in the reign of David. And if you remember the story way back, we looked at it. It appears in the end of Shmuel Bet, but it's really a much earlier story where David and the Givonim. Remember the story of the Givonim? Where David, there's a famine for 3 years because then God says it's because Shaul had killed all the Givonim as an act of retribution, and God was not happy with that. So now there's a famine for 3 years. All of that, that's Parakhov. Aleph, I believe. Va'yira'av b'imei David shalosh shanim. 3 years sequentially, there was a famine. David sought God's understanding. Va'yivakesh David b'nei Hashem, and God's answer to him was El Shaul ve'el Beit Adamim al asher hamita takivonim. This is all happening because of Shaul and his household and the blood on Shaul's house, because he killed all the givonim. We had learned this chapter in the context, just to put it together, of the Givonim who had assassinated Ishbosheth in the end of the civil war that led to the final act to bring the kingdom together. And David was very upset with that. But so we had learned this story then. So whatever, the king calls over the Givonim and he wants to make peace with them. And it's a very bloody story. It's a very hard story to understand. They, the children of the Givonim, want revenge from Shaul, and they take the revenge on the family of Shaul by literally killing everybody in the royal family in the bloodline. And then the only thing is that Ve'echmol ha'melech ha'mefiboshet ben Yonatan ben Shaul. David had compassion on one last child, namely Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul. So at this point, he clearly knows who Mephibosheth is. And so the likelihood is that these two stories are connected, chapter 9 and chapter 21, when he is introduced to Mephibosheth. That's also the chapter, by the way, where David realizes the importance of burial. And Ve'elech David ve'ikach et atzmot Shaul ve'et atzmot Yonatan beno me'et balei yavesh gilad. David, in that chapter, had gone out of his way to take Shaul's body that had, when he died in Hagiboa, and had been captured by the Philistines. His body was salvaged by the people of Yavesh Gilad. David then goes and takes the body of Shaul, the bones of Shaul, and gives them proper burial in their hometown. And he brings them to burial. And he buries them properly in the tribal territory of Binyamin, bekever kish aviv, in the land of in the grave, or in the ancestral land belonging to his father Kish. This is a very subtle but a very important point, which is that the importance of ancestral burial land. Remember, land in Tanakh goes by family lineage. And one of the most important reasons why every family had land was because on that land you were buried. And if you didn't have land, there were no communal cemeteries, you didn't have a place to be buried. So that was like one of the worst things you could do, is to take somebody's land away and then they have nowhere to be buried. So David finally, after many years, takes the body of Shaul, the bones of Shaul and Yonatan, and he brings them back to their ancestral burial place in Kever Kish Aviv. All that's in chapter 21. We are going back just a little bit to where David, for the first time, encounters and meets Mephibosheth. Ve'yomer David, achi yesh od asher natan lebeit Shaul. Is there anybody left in the house of Shaul? Says he asks David in chapter 9. Ve'asei mo chesed b'avo Yonatan. Turns out, lebeit Shaul, Eved, the house of Shaul, had a servant. Ushmo Tziva. His name was Tziva. So Vayikru'ulu El David calls over Tziva. This is very important to remember the time differentiation here. This is an early story. This is David meeting Tziva, meeting Mephibosheth, understanding who they are. Our story in Perek Tet Zayin is years later. The second story in the arc of David's relationship with Mephibosheth. Vayomer Hamelach Elav, Ha'ata Tziva, are you Tziva, servant of Shaul? Vayomer Avdecha, I am your servant. Vayomer Hamelach, the king says to him, Ha'efes od ish lebet Shaul, do you know if there's anybody left at the house of Shaul? Yaseimo chesed alokim, I will pay him a kindness, I owe them a kindness. Vayomer Tziva Hamelach, od ben Yonatan Nechedeklein. Yes, Yonatan has a child who is Necher Raglayim. This child is lame. This child is a cripple. Vayomer lo HaMelech, Eifohu, where is he? Where does he live? Where can I find him, this child? Vayomer Tziva HaMelech, Hinehu Beit Machir Ben Amiel Belodava. He's over in the house of Machir Ben Amiel, in a place called Lo Davar, which is on the other side of the Yarden. He's living there. He's been adopted there. He's in a foster home there. Whatever he's doing there, that's where he's living. Veishlach HaMelech David, Ayikacheyu mibeit Mechir ben Amiel mi Lo Davar. So David sends and fetches him from the house of Mechir ben Amiel, from this place called Lo Davar. ויבוא מפיבושת בן יונתן בן שאול אל דוד. So מפיבושת comes to David with his whole lineage. מפיבושת בן יונתן בן שאול. ויבוא פניו וישתחו, he falls on his face and he bows down to David. ויאמר דוד, מפיבושת? Is that you, מפיבושת? ויאמר, הנה עבדך, I am, behold, your servant. ויאמר לו דוד, אל תירא. Don't be afraid, David, says to him. Ki aso esemcha chesed, I will pay you kindness. Ba'avur Yonatan avicha, because your son, your father Yonatan and I made a commitment to each other. And I will stand by that commitment. Ba'ashivoti lechat kol sdei Shaul avicha, and I will restore to you the land of your father's household. And here's the first time we encounter the story of this land. This land will become critical for us because the arc of the story of David and Mephibosheth revolves around this land. So David says, I will take this land, I will restore it to you. If I'm restoring it to you, where is it presently? You can't physically move land, but you can move the title and the deed to the land. So who is in control of this land if David has to restore it to the last remaining heir of the household of Shaul, to whom does this,
David seems to be the owner of it, if he can restore it to him, right?
No, David is not the owner of this land. This land is in possession of and in control of?
Avshalom.
Nope, not Avshalom. Remember, the house of Shaul has
wasn't that Ziba?
Yeah, the house of Shaul has somebody in charge. There's a servant to the house of Shaul. His name is Tziva. And he's been there, right? The only one other than Tziva, who is the Eved of the house of Shaul, the only one left is Mephibosheth, and he's out at a foster home. So David says to him, Hashivoti lechat kol sdei Shaul avicha, I will restore it all to you. Not only that, he says to Tziva, to Mephibosheth, V'yata tochal lechem al shulchani tamid. I promise you, Mephibosheth, you will eat bread at my table continually. You will be a ben bayit at my house, at my table. You will live in the palace. I will take care of you. I will feed you. I will provide you. I will be equivalent. And he basically adopts him. Vayishtachu, vayomer, me'avdecha, I bow down, he says, what is your servant, that you should look at me, ki panita lakelav ameta shekamoni, that you should look at me, I'm such a dead dog. It's a really interesting phrase, right? The only other time that phrase appears is in our story, which is what Shimon ben Gera accuses David of being. But, okay, Mephibosheth says, why would you do this? Okay. Then the plot thickens. Vayikra melech al Tziva na'ar Shaul. King calls over Tziva na'ar Shaul. And you can understand, David is no slouch. David is a sharp leader. He understands exactly who he's dealing with. Vayomer elav, he says to Tziva, kol asher haya l'Shaul ulechol beito, all of the possessions belonging to Shaul and his household, netati leven adonecha. I hereby restore to your master's son, referring to Mephibosheth. He has that authority, he's the king. And therefore, you will till the land for him. You will serve, continue to do what you are doing, which is to farm the land, produce the parnasa off the land, but not for yourself, but rather for him. Ata. Uvanecha v'avadecha, you, your sons, and your servants. Wait, Tziva is the servant. I mean, servant has servants? Evidently, this servant has servants. Ve'veita ve'ayal leben adonecha lechem v'achalo, you will bring this bread and this fruit, and you will bring it to your master. U'mefiboshet ben adonecha yochal tamid lechem ha'shulchani. But Mephibosheth, your master's son, to the household, will get the produce off the land. As far as Mephibosheth, he will eat at my table. Open parentheses. Ulitzivah chamisha sar banim be'esrim avadim. Tziva had 15 sons and 20 servants. Now, how do you amass 15 sons and 20 servants? You obviously have multiple wives, so 15 sons and multiple servants. I suspect that Tziva was making a pretty penny off of the land of Sheol. And all of that comes to an end. Vayomer Tziva al HaMelech. Tziva says to the king, whatever the king commands his servant, so shall it be. Mephibosheth will eat at my table like one of the king's sons. Problem? Red flag?
Well, he just contradicted.
David did not say that Mephibosheth would eat at Tziva's table. David said Mephibosheth would eat at
David's table.
David's table. No problem, my dear king. So shall it be. Mephibosheth will eat at my table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth ben katon ishma micha. Mephibosheth had a young son. His name was Micha. And all that dwelled in the house of Tziva were servants to Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth yoshev b'Yerushalayim. Mephibosheth remains in Yerushalayim. Ki al shulchan hamelech tamidu ochel. In other words, David wasn't buying Tziva's little nuanced change of heart, and he says, no, he'll eat at my table. So this is an interesting conflict between Tziva and David. And Mephibosheth was piseach shtei raglav, was lame in both feet. He could not walk. He had to be pushed in either a wheelchair or carried on an animal. They didn't have wheelchairs in those days, but he had to be assisted. We will talk about that momentarily. That's the story of Tziva and Mephibosheth in Perek Tet. So just to kind of put a background to it in context, do you get a sense from this story that David knows what he's dealing with the likes of this guy by the name of Tziva? Does he trust Tziva? Is Tziva trustworthy? Oh. No.
Nope.
Who is the recipient of David's kindness in Chesed? Mephibosheth. It puts Tziva on notice. I've been watching you. You're the land that you tried to usurp from Shaul's household. I'm giving it all to Mephibosheth. And you become the servant of Mephibosheth. Fine. That's Perek Tet. And that's where the story ends. Perek Yud, David and Bathsheba. The war with Ammon. Yud Aleph, David and Bathsheba. Yud Bet, David and Natan. Yud Gimel, Avshalom and Tamar. Yud Dalid, Avshalom's exile. Tet Vav, David's exile. See what's going on? Tet Zion, David is now leaving the palace. And who does he encounter? If not, Tziva and Mephibosheth. And with Tziva is an extraordinary feast of provisions. Tzemet chamonim chabushim, saddle donkeys, loaves of bread by the hundreds, clusters of raisins and summer fruits and dried figs by the hundreds, bottles of wine, casks of wine, nevo yayin. And he looks at Tziva and he says, what is all this? And Tziva says, I brought this all to you, for your household to ride on, and the bread and the fruits for your soldiers, and the wine in case you're thirsty. I brought it all for you, my king. And immediately, David's first question is, and where is the son of your master? Meaning, where is Mephibosheth? What do you mean you brought it for me? You work for Mephibosheth. Where is Mephibosheth? Now, Mephibosheth's not coming. He's waiting for Israel to restore him to Saul's throne, says Tziva.
Or maybe he was just stuck there.
We'll come to wait a second. We'll come to what really happened in a second. But that's what Tziva says. He's in Yerushalayim waiting for the throne to restore to the house of Saul. You understand that that statement in and of itself is treason. Because Saul's kingdom is gone. David's the king. If not David, it's Avshalom, one or the other. It's certainly not Beit Shaul. Hey, but nobody has an illusion that this rebellion of Avshalom is going to restore Saul's descendants to the throne. It's certainly not Mephibosheth. This is really quite an extraordinary and almost astounding accusation. We will have to test its authenticity momentarily. But even more surprising than Tziva's accusation that Mephibosheth is committing treason, waiting in Yerushalayim after everything David did for him, the king's response here is even more extraordinary. Vayomer HaMelech leTziva, the king says to Tziva, Hinei lecha kol asher leMephibosheth. Now we understand the significance of this phrase. I hereby restore to you everything I took from you and gave to Mephibosheth. In other words, what David does in one fell swoop here is to undo what he had done in Perek Tet and take that land away from Mephibosheth, because Mephibosheth, according to Tziva, has committed treason, and treason doesn't deserve the land. And he gives it back to the loyal servant, Tziva. And you have to ask yourself the obvious question, which is, what basis does David buy this accusation made by somebody whose duplicity and whose dishonesty and whose integrity has been challenged back in already Perek Tet? I mean, that's exactly who Tziva is. You're going to take Tziva at his word? That Mephibosheth, who is lame, who cannot walk for himself, is sitting in Yerushalayim waiting for him to be restored to the throne? That's the basis for which you're going to return the land to Mephibosheth, to Tziva? It's astounding. What's even more astounding is that the story gets more complex, because we know, or at least we have Mephibosheth's own testimony as to why it was that Mephibosheth did not go with David. He tells David exactly why he didn't go with David when David returns to Yerushalayim. So that the arc of the story of David and Tziva and Mephibosheth takes place in three sections: chapter 9, chapter 16, which we've just done, and the third piece of the story is in chapter 19. So we're going to take a quick jump. 17 is the war. 17 and 18 of the war between David and Avshalom. 19, David begins the return to Yerushalayim. And I'm going to skip all of this. We'll come to it eventually. Get to Pasuk Chaf Hei. David has reached Yerushalayim. It's interesting. He has another encounter with Shimon ben Gera when he returns to Yerushalayim. And there's some suggestion, you know, the sort of a concept known as chiasmus or chiastic structure, where he leaves Yerushalayim, encounters Mephibosheth and Tziva, and then Shimon ben Gera on the way back to Yerushalayim, encounters Shimon ben Gera first, and then Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth ben Shaul yirad likrat hamelech. Mephibosheth ben Shaul came down to meet the king. V'lo asa raglav, v'lo asa spamo. He didn't dress his feet, he didn't trim his beard, he didn't wash his clothes. From the day the king left Yerushalayim until the day he came back in peace, Mephibosheth did not wash his face, and he did not wash his clothes, and he did not do his legs, and he did not shave his beard. In other words, what was he doing?
Mourning.
Mourning. These are all signs of mourning. Ve'ikival Yerushalayim likvat ha-melech. When he came to Yerushalayim, when he came to Yerushalayim, meaning the king and Mephibosheth meet, Ve'yomala ha-melech, the king turns to Mephibosheth and he says the following first words out of his mouth. Lama lo alachta imi Mephibosheth? Mephibosheth, why didn't you come with me? Vayomer Adoni HaMelech, Avdi Emeyomer, he said, Adoni HaMelech, my servant, my lord, my king, Avdi Rimani, my servant deceived me, my servant lied to me. Who is his servant?
Ziba.
Ziba. Ki amar avdecha, your servant said, I, meaning Mephibosheth, said, Ech b'shalia chamor ve'erkav aleha ve'elech et ha-melech. I will saddle myself a donkey and ride with it to the king, but I needed a donkey to do so, ki piseach avdecha, because your servant is lame. I can't walk on myself by myself, so I needed an animal to ride with me. So I turned to my servant and I said, get me my saddle, get me my donkey, and I can go. Ayiragel be'avdecha. But this tziva, he slandered your servant. He slandered me. El Adoni HaMelech. Adoni HaMelech kemalach Elokim. My Lord, my King, is like an angel of God. Aseto beinecha. Do what is good in your eyes. Kilo Yaakov beit avi ki im anshei mavet laAdoni HaMelech. My father's household were deserving of death at the hands of the king. But tashet et avdecha, you spared your servant. Miochlei shulchanecha, and you put me at your table. You put your servant at your table. Ma yesh liot tzedaka v'lizuok od al ha-melech. What right do I have to cry anymore to the king? I owe you my life. I owe you everything. So what happened here? So now let's put the pieces together. What happened actually? Assuming they take Mephibosheth at his word, what actually happened?
Ziba lied.
Ziba lied, and he's doing something that he will prosper from.
What happened here? Let's just go through the facts. Mephibosheth said to Ziba, prepare me my donkey so that I can ride out to the king. When David meets Ziba, he's alone. So what happened in the middle? What is Avdi Rimani and Vayuagel ba'avdecha? My servant deceived me and my servant slandered me. What are they referred to? I told Tziva to go get my saddle and get myself ready so I can go and meet the king. What did Tziva do?
He went off and he left him behind.
He left without him.
He went to exactly right. Sort of play up to David.
He left without him. Exactly right. Left him without. Without Tziva, there's nothing. Mephibosheth can't go anywhere. Ziba went without him and accused him of staying behind because he was committing treason waiting for the house of Shaul. So the king now has two conflicting stories to what took place. He has the story of Ziba back in chapter 16, and he has Mephibosheth's version of the story in chapter 19. Okay, who would you believe? If you had to pick, which version of the story would you believe?
Mephibosheth,
of course. Vayomer lo ha-melech, to which the king said, Lama tedaber od varecha, why do you speak anymore? Be silent. Amarti, I have said, I have ruled. What was the ruling? Ata v'tziva techalku et hasadeh. You and Tziva split it. You know, it's like the Mishnah in Shnayim Ochzin, Mishnah in Bava Metzia. This one says it's all mine. This one says it's all mine. What's the halacha? You split it. Says David, okay, Tziva says it's his. You say it's yours. Split it. And Mephibosheth's response, V'yomer Mephibosheth el ha-melech, gam et hakol yikach. You know what? He can have the whole thing. Achrei sheba Adoni ha-melech b'shalom al-beito. All I want is that you came home with peace. It's like Shalom on the baby. Right? All I want is that you should come home with peace. It's really, it's remarkable. It's one of the most extraordinary conversations in the whole arc of David. I will tell you, which we will look at it much more in depth in Perek Yetet. Chazal are more critical of David for David's response to Mephibosheth here than they are for the entire story of David and Bathsheba. And they argue that the consequences here are more long-lasting than even the story of David and Bathsheba. So we will have to come back to this at length. But I, right now, want to come back to Perek Tzayin. Judy, you had a question?
Yeah, we're told, now you don't remember which Perek, that he has a son named Micha.
Yes.
If he's mentioned, he's got to be there for a reason.
Yeah, Micha is and where he fits into the picture is unclear, but not relevant to this part of the story.
Then why mention him?
I don't know. I don't know a good answer to that question. He's there. He had a family. He was married. The family.
Wouldn't
but I want to come back to the... I want to come back to Perek Tzayin. I want to come back to Tziva. Because now the story gets even more complicated. Now that we've read Perek Tet, we've reviewed Perek Tet, we've looked at Perek Yutet, we know what the arc starts and ends. We're now looking at the middle piece of the story where David hears Tziva's accusation and he buys it hook, line, and sinker. And the big question, which we're not going to answer today, but the big question hovering over this whole episode is, why does David believe Tziva? Why is he responding in this way?
He's hungry?
No, I think it's because he's hungry. I shouldn't say that. He might be hungry, but we'll get to that piece in a second. But there's got to be more to it than just hunger. But I throw it out there as a question. We will explore what that missing part of the puzzle is, Bezrat Hashem, over the next couple of weeks. But before I do that, I just want to I want to take a closer look for a second at the this pasuk. V'nei tziva nar mefiboshet l'kvato. David is heading north from Har HaZeitim, and tziva nar mefiboshet is there to meet him. Together with all of these donkeys and all of food, which I'm not going to repeat and describe again. The first question out of David's mouth is, V'yomer ha-melech el tziva, ma'el alach, what is this? An odd question, right? He comes to David with these donkeys laden with food. Of course they're for the army. Of course they're for provisions. Of course they're for, right? He's coming to David. It's like Esav meeting Yaakov, and then Yaakov sends all these gifts in front of him. Tziva is coming with all of these donkeys and all of this food and provisions and 100 loaves of bread and 100 cakes of figs. David's immediate response is, Ma'el alach, why are you, what do you mean by this? Why do you have it here? David over ma'at me'erosh v'inei tziva nar mefiboshet likvato. Tziva's there with all the food, and David's response, Ma'el alach. So he explains, okay, so they're for the household, they're for the king, and they're for the army, and they're for the people. And immediately David's second question, Vayei ben Adonecha. And where's your master? And where's Mephibosheth? Almost get the sense that David was expecting Mephibosheth if there was all of these provisions. Ma'el alach, what are these provisions for you? These provisions belong to Ayyeh ben Adonech. And in fact, if we start to put the pieces of the puzzle together, David seems skeptical that Tziva prepared all of these provisions, right? You kind of get that impression. He says to Ma'el alach, what is this? What do you mean by this? What is this for you? And then he says, V'ayei ben Adonecha. And the whole conversation is around these provisions. Hundreds of loaves of bread and hundreds of cakes of figs, etc. And David's response, what is this? And he said, oh, it's for you. Well, if it's for you, so where's Mephibosheth? I don't get the question. Forget the answer for a second. I don't get the question. But the truth is that we do get the question a little bit, because what are all of these animals sitting on? The chamorim are saddled, right? Chamorim chavushim, saddled donkeys, together with hundreds of clusters of raisins and summer fruits and bottles of wine. And David is skeptical right away. Why? Why is he so skeptical?
Where is Tziva going?
Where is Tziva going? He's coming to greet David. V'nei Tziva na'ar mefiboshet likrato, with all of the provisions.
What, the donkey probably was for Mephibosheth, and he left him behind.
Well, he doesn't know that yet. Remember, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that anybody was left behind. Right? He just says, where's Mephibosheth? But I think you all intuitively understand, right? The more we focus on the story, the more we realize that Tziva works for whom?
Tziva.
Right? Tziva works for Mephibosheth. If Tziva works for Mephibosheth, then you can't bring saddles of hundreds of loaves of bread and clusters of raisins and summer fruits and bottles of wine without the authorization of the Baal Hasada. Right? The owner has to provide provisions. But so you always get the sense that his first thought is that maybe Tziva is running away and has stolen these provisions from Mephibosheth. Tziva's here with all the provisions and Mephibosheth's not. That's an odd scene. I wouldn't even go one step further, and I think you're...
Mephibosheth sent them.
So that's his question. Did Mephibosheth send them? That's exactly his question. Did Mephibosheth send you with this? And his answer is no. Mephibosheth's sitting in Yerushalayim waiting for him to become king, which means that I took them myself. So faced with the option of Tziva providing provisions off the field to David and Mephibosheth waiting in Yerushalayim to become king, David says, okay, I'll take the field and give it back to you. But, what really happened, we know, is Ve'yomar Adoni HaMelech Avdi Rimani, Ki Amar Avdecha Ech B'Shali HaChamor. What really happened was, Mephibosheth said to Tziva, I will saddle the donkey, meaning Merkavala, and I will ride on it, Ve'elech al HaMelech, and I will go to the king. Means, what was Mephibosheth intending to do? To go to the king on a saddled donkey himself, right? But go to the king alone? Or maybe to go to the king with all of these provisions, right? Saddle donkeys, that was Mephibosheth's idea. The bread and the fruit and the dried fruit and the wine, we don't know whose idea that was, but it makes sense that it would be Mephibosheth's. And when Mephibosheth says, Avdivi Mani, that he cheated me, that he deceived me, and that he slandered me, this means he took all of my provisions and he came to you and he said they're his provisions that he brought to you, but they're really my provisions that I was preparing for you. I mean, you could even go so far, I don't know if I can go this far in the pshat, but maybe you could make the argument that Tziva had absolutely no intention of bringing them to David. You look at the geography for a second of where we are, just to kind of put things in perspective. Here's Yerushalayim. Here's Nachal Kidron. David is heading north. He comes to Har HaZeitim. And from Har HaZeitim, he's headed this way, up to Bachurim. right? That's the direction that he's traveling in. And somewhere in here, he meets Siva. But somewhere in here, sorry, let me erase all that because that's not going to work. Somewhere in here is, in fact, not far from the territory of Binyamin, right? So if Tziva is from an Eved of the house of Shaul, the territory, that the land to which we are talking about is the land here in the area of Givat Shaul, it's quite possible that Tziva was not even heading to David. David doesn't know where David is going. David is heading straight this way. What does Tziva know? So Tziva could be sitting up here with... It's unclear that Mephibosheth is even in Yerushalayim. Because remember, it says in Perek Yutef that Mephibosheth comes to Yerushalayim. Could be that they're all sitting in Givat Shaul, in which case Tziva is taking this food and provisions that Mephibosheth had prepared. And where is he taking it? Is he taking it to David? I don't know. But David, Avar Ma'at Me'arosh, V'inei Tziva Na'ar Mephibosheth L'Kratot. And behold, he saw Tziva in front of him. Was Tziva coming to him? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he was taking all of the provisions that we now know he took from Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth had prepared it all for David, and he went his merry way, expecting to take it all for himself, until he ran into a problem, which is David. And David is standing there, and David says to him, "What are you doing here?" And so he comes up with a perfect excuse. "I brought it all for your army. I brought it all for you." And David buys it, hook, line, and sinker. It was almost as if David was expecting it, except he was expecting it from
Mephibosheth.
And so what I want to do for the last 10 minutes today is I want to ask a very simple question. Why was David expecting it from Mephibosheth, not from Tziva? And when it comes from Tziva, it's so ironic and so hurtful to David that he buys the excuse of the treason and he just takes the land away and gives it to Mephibosheth. There's something irking David in this story. And I share with you the following observation. Now, this, I can't prove this. This is all we've long since moved from the world of pshat to the world of conjecture, just to kind of pull the background into the story. But I think that there's something to be said for it. And that is the fact that there's a certain irony in the parallel between David's flight from the palace now. I'm going to stop sharing for 1 second. David's flight from the palace now, and the last time David had to flee from the palace. This is not the first time David has been forced to run away. David is, in a sense, accustomed to running away, unfortunately. But the first time David runs away is when Shaul is king and Shaul tries to kill him. And he runs temporarily, and then he comes back and he has a whole encounter with Yonatan. And in that encounter with Yonatan, he says to Yonatan, "Your father wants to kill me." And Yonatan says, "No, you misunderstand. That can't be. My father told me he wouldn't try that." So I said, "Okay, do you remember the story?" We read it as the Haftorah on Shabbos Erev Rosh Chodesh, Haftorah Macha Chodesh. Yonatan says to David, "Okay, we'll make a test. You hide in the field. I'll go to my father's feast on Rosh Chodesh. We'll have a game with the arrows. My father says, if I think my father's really trying to kill you, I'll send the arrows in one direction. If I think that he's really not trying to kill you, I'll send the arrows in another direction." You remember that story? Okay, that's all in Shmuel Aleph. Shmuel Aleph Perkath. It's not the last time David and Yonatan see each other, but it is the second to last time that David and Yonatan see each other. And actually, you know what? Let me show you the end of that story because I think it's important. Shmuel Aleph, Perek, Kaf. Vayivrach David min avot beramah, vayavon, he comes to Yonatan. They're in Ramah, they're in an area called Nayot Birama, and they come to Yonatan and David gathered together. Where this is unclear, but I can already tell you it's near Geva, Binyamin, Ramah, Binyamin are all more or less in the same area. So we're sort of more or less in this region here. Okay? Fine. And David says to Yonatan, "What have I? Why is your father trying to kill me?" And Yonatan denies it. Okay, I'm going to skip the whole story. I am only interested. David says to him, "Hine chodesh machah, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh. There's a feast going on. I'm going to not be there. I'm going to pretend to take leave and go to Beit Lechem. You test your father and see what happens." You all know the story, right? Okay, I want to come to the very end. The part of the problem is that it's not one day Rosh Chodesh, it's two. Right? This whole story takes place where the first day of Rosh Chodesh, Shaul says, okay, he wants to go away. He thinks it's an accident that David's not there. By the second day already, by Ked Mokom David, he saw that David was absent. The second day he says, why is David not here? And Yonatan says, he asked me to go to Beit Lechem, and Shaul gets furious. Vayichar af Shaul b'Yonatan, and he accuses him of being a part of the treason and the rebellion, and he tries to kill Yonatan. At that point, Yonatan knows exactly what he's dealing with. He gets up from the table in anger, and he didn't eat that second day, and he is shamed for David, and he runs to David in the morning. So now, how many days is David in the field? How many days has David been hiding? Three, right? Because there were 2 days for Shchodesh, and now he's coming the next day. So David has been in the field for 3 days. They come to the field, and now they're going to meet. I have the whole story with the arrows, which I'm going to skip because we went through it once before. And finally, the weapon bearer of the arrows who goes home, he goes back to the city, and David, Vanarba, but David kam it's Lanekev. David rose out of the place where he was hiding. Vayipol apav artsa, he fall on the ground. Vayishtachu shalosh pamim, they bow down to each other. Vayishku ishet re'eyu, and they kiss each other. Vayifku ishet re'eyu, they kiss, they fall on each other, and they cry. Ad David igdil. But David cried more. Now, why David cried more? Probably because David was going into exile. Yonatan was the son of the king, so David had every reason to cry more. We'll explore that in more detail B'zrat Hashem next week. Mayoma Yonatan to David, Lech l'shalom, says Yonatan, go in peace. Shenishbanu shneinu anachnu b'shem Hashem le'mor, Hashem yiyeh b'niyu b'necho ben zahiyu ben zaracha ad olam. God shall be between you and me and my seed and your seed forever. We take an eternal oath to stand by each other and to stand by each other's children for eternity. And so is the That's oath between.
Point. And it's his kid.
Right? It's Yonatan's child. And Mephibosheth is where this is all
right.
Coming.
Right. Okay.
And with that, if the story stopped there, fine, so be it. But the story doesn't stop there. Because what's the next parak? I don't know if you noticed, I kept hinting to the fact that where are we on the map? Yerushalayim, Bachurim. What's this? Anybody see it? Where are we?
That's Nov, which is where Nov. The priests
right?
were
this going. This is Bachurim, and this is Nov. Today it's the university, the Hebrew University campus. All right, Sophie. We're by Nov. And if you look at the next parak, the next story, Vayakom Vayelach, Yonatan Bahair goes back to the city, Vayavod David Nov, David ran to Nov. From that encounter, David runs to Nov. And what do we know about David when he came to Nov? So there's a whole encounter. Achimelech takes one look at David and he's frightened. He says, what are you doing here? The king is trying to kill you. And David pretends that he's on a mission from the king. Fine. David responds. He says, I'm on a mission from the king. Nobody knows. Don't tell anybody. Ma yesh tachet yadcha? What do you have in your hands? Maybe you have chamisha lechem tna b'yadi. Maybe you have a couple of loaves of bread that you can give me. And the kohen says, all I have is lechem apanim. All I have is lechem kodesh. So if you're all tahor and you can guarantee that you've been tahor, etc., I can let you have the lechem apanim. Now, David's encounter in Nov is very faithful and tragic. Why? Because in Nov is also Yisham Ish Me'abdei Sha'ul Bayomahu, his name was Doeg Adomi. And so David knows that Doeg Adomi is there, and David goes back to Sha'ul, and Doeg tells Sha'ul where David is, and David and Sha'ul in a fit of wrath against the Kohanim for harboring David, for giving David food, and for giving David a weapon, the sword of Goliath, Sha'ul comes and he murders the entire city of Nov. That murder of the entire city of Nov is Sha'ul's greatest crime. Much worse than Amalek. Chazal say that it was for that crime of the blood of the city of Nov that ultimately Sha'ul's kingdom was destroyed. Why does David go to Nov? And David blames himself for the fall of Nov, his entire career. What we talked about once before. Why does David go to Nov? Goes to Nov for one reason. Doesn't need to go to Nov. Goes to Nov for one reason.
Is that where they reclaim their kingdom? Is that?
No.
No, that's a different place.
He goes to Nov for one reason only. He says it. He is starving. He has not eaten in 3 days. Why has he not eaten in 3 days?
He's been hiding.
He's been hiding in the field. Yonatan sent him right away. He left him. He said, Shaul's after you. For 3 days, he's been hiding in the field. Yonatan says to him, Shaul is going to kill you. He runs away. He hasn't eaten for 3 days. So he runs to Nov to get some food. The end result is that Nov is destroyed. But you have to ask yourself the obvious question, which is, why is he starving? Where was he hiding? Or who should I say, who knew he was hiding? Yonatan. Yonatan came to him to tell him to leave. Yonatan couldn't bring him a couple of sandwiches? You think I jest? You know what Chazal say about that encounter? Here's what Chazal say about that encounter. Gemara in Sanhedrin. Amar of Yehuda Marav. If Yonatan had only given David 2 loaves of bread, Nov, the city of Kohanim, would not have been destroyed, and Doeg Adomi would not have been guilty of what he is guilty of, Sha'ul would not have been killed together with his sons, and the story of Jewish history would have been different. If only Yonatan had enough seichel not to send David off alone, starving.
Well, I have a question about that.
Hang on a second. Before you get the question, let me just finish the thought. Where are we now? Where we are now is years later. And David is again fleeing for his life. The circumstances are so intense and so parallel. David, last time he fled from the palace because the king wanted to kill him, or the would-be king wanted to kill him, was the last time he encountered Yonatan. And he's running for his life. And he's running for with the army. The difference is that he was king and he has an army and he has an entire, it's not by himself. He has an entire entourage and he has 600 men to feed of his own king army and Yoav's men. And then he had the Tzva Giborim. And now he has another 600 men of Itai Giti. So he's not starving for himself, but he is lacking provisions. And who's the one person who has both the field and the opportunity to provide him those provisions? Again, he's not in Yerushalayim. Mephibosheth's not in Yerushalayim. Mephibosheth is in He comes to Yerushalayim at the end. Mephibosheth is in Geva Binyamin, here. And David is running north to Bachurim. He's running exactly to where one person who has it within him to provide him with all those provisions. And so I think he expected Mephibosheth to come. Not only did he expect Mephibosheth to come, think about the irony. The last time he ran away, it was Yonatan who didn't give him food and who sent him to Nov starving. And here is him, David, running to Bachurim, and he's waiting for Mephibosheth to bring him the provision so that he doesn't come away starving. And Mephibosheth ben Yonatan is an opportunity for Mephibosheth to turn the table and to repay David for the kindness that David had paid him all those years. And that's exactly what Mephibosheth intended to do. And he saddled up the donkeys and he saddled up the horses and he said, let's bring these provisions to David. And Tziva says, great idea, locks the door behind him and runs. And encounters David. And he says to David, oh, it's Mephibosheth. He's sitting though there waiting for the palace. He's in Yerushalayim, waiting for the palace to be handed over to him. I've got the provisions. I'll take care of the king. And the tragedy of that moment is in David's mind, what he hears, what he sees, is the history repeating itself. Yonatan left him to fend for himself without provisions. Mephibosheth left him to fend for himself without provisions. Those provisions came from Tziva. Whether he believes it, why does he believe it? I think he believes it in the back of his mind, in part, we'll see there's a larger part of the picture, but in part because there is a certain part of him that sees like father, like son. Oh, that's exactly where Yonatan failed. Now that's where Mephibosheth failed. And so he's angry at Yonatan, spilling off a little bit into his anger at Mephibosheth. Not justifiably, don't get me wrong. Right? I'm not in any way justifying David's behavior. On the contrary, Chazal are more critical of him here than any other part of his life. But his failure is driven in part by his own sense of part guilt and part angst at what happened to him all those years before when Yonatan sent him away without provisions. And he's feeling, we're sensing from Tziva that that's the pattern that Mephibosheth has followed now too. So that I think pulls this piece of the story together. Not complete, we're still missing a big part of the puzzle, and we'll talk about that part of the puzzle next week, but Debbie had a question first.
Oh yeah, so my question is like, David doesn't seem to really prepare for himself in these situations, but he also maybe has the opportunity to prepare for himself, right? I mean, just as much as Yonatan does, because Yonatan doesn't expect that his father's going to try to kill him and he has to run away, right?
Well, so when we learned Perek Chaf, we talked a little bit about the fact that the one turn of events that I don't think David or Yonatan expected was whether it's one day or 2 days Rosh Chodesh are not necessarily predetermined. So it could be that they were just hiding in the field expecting it to be a one day, because he says Machar Chodesh, and suddenly the Bezdin declared a 2 day Rosh Chodesh, and now he is nothing, right? Nothing happened on day one, and now he has to wait till day two. And in the meantime, he has no way to communicate that to David. So it could be that the circumstances were such that it made David's plight much harder. But I still expect Yonatan to behave differently. I expect Yonatan to behave differently on multiple fronts, not just by providing David provisions. Next week, we'll talk about the other part of that story, which I think for David was even more painful, and for which David holds a long-standing grudge against the house of Yonatan, and that we'll talk about Bezrat Hashem next week.
He's also very loyal, like, to people that have been kind to him.
Who's
David. Wasn't there...
David is very loyal. But
he's
David
very sensitive,
also,
like, yeah.
But David is also very wary of the house of Yonatan.
Right.
Why
he's no, so but there was someone else, another battle that he had that where he went and they hit him and he was very loyal to.
Yes. He won't. For sure. We'll talk about. But is the house of Yonatan is particularly problematic for David. We'll talk about that for Sof Hashem next week. Okay.
Thank you.
I apologize for that. For those of you for whom it's 9:40, I apologize even more twice over. And have a wonderful evening and enjoy.